I'm Manila Chan. You are tuned into Modus Operandi. They're here, and they have been, if you listen to what one U.S. Air Force veteran told Congress. Aliens, UFOs, UAPs, extraterrestrial life, whatever you want to call it, the world is fascinated at the prospect of visitors from beyond Earth. Tonight, we'll talk to the world's leading astrophysicist about his latest findings in the ocean that might corroborate the existence of them. All right, let's get into the MO. All through written history, there have been sightings in the heavens. While modern science can now explain some of these aerial phenomena, what about the many reports from around the world that have no technological explanation? And further, with some of the biggest economies in the world, come a variation of a UFO task force assigned to it. Does the sheer existence of these governmental groups around the world mean these governments know something the public doesn't? So here to discuss the latest developments in the cosmos is the foremost expert in astrophysics. Professor at Harvard University, director of the Institute for Theory and Computation, the head of the Galileo Project. His newest book is out now. It's called Interstellar. Dr. Avi Loeb is with us. Dr. Loeb, such a pleasure to have you. First, can you explain for us the purpose of your recent sea expedition near Manus Island, what you found there, and what this means in the greater context of evidence that there is life beyond Earth?
On January 8, 2014, the U.S. government identified a fireball from a meteor, an object that collided with Earth and exploded about 20 kilometers over the Pacific Ocean. And what was special about this meteor is that it was moving very fast relative to the sun. In fact, it was moving outside the solar system faster than 95% of all stars at 60 kilometers per second. And that implied that it's interstellar in origin, that it came from outside the solar system. The first object recognized as such from 2014, almost a decade ago. And the US government, besides confirming the interstellar origin, they also provided information, data about the fireball that allowed me and my undergraduate student, Amir Siraj, to infer that this meteor was tougher than all space rocks recorded by NASA over the past decade, 272 of them. So not only was it fast, it was also tough in material strength. And that raised the possibility that maybe it's like Voyager that we launched out of the solar system and that will potentially collide with another planet in a few billion years. Maybe it's a spacecraft. So to find out, I led an expedition to the Pacific Ocean at the location of the meteor path. And the idea was to search the ocean floor for any remnants, any fragments, spherules, molten droplets from the surface of the object when it was exposed to the immense heat from the fireball, a few percent of the Hiroshima atomic bomb released into 500 kilograms of matter. And we rented a ship, fittingly called the Silver Star, and we connected a sled that we built with magnets on both sides through a cable to the ship, and we dragged the sled on the ocean floor back and forth along 10 kilometers in length. And we did it 26 times, and amazingly, we recovered those molten droplets that are less than a millimeter in size. They were concentrated along the expected meteor path, and they appear to be mostly spherical in shape, very distinct from volcanic ash that was much more abundant that we also collected with our magnets. And by now, we have 727 such spherules, these metallic marbles less than a millimeter in size, each of which weighs less than a milligram. And we are examining their composition. The significance is that it's the first time that humans put their hands on the materials of a large object bigger than half a meter that came from outside the solar system. We are trying to find out whether the composition of these spherules is of materials that came from outside the solar system. That's the first question. And the second question is whether it was artificial in origin. Just imagine the walls of Voyager being melted. The droplets that would result from that would be very different from the droplets from a rock. And the same is true for melting semiconductors, as well as computer screens. So we can, in principle, tell the difference between a technologically manufactured device and a rock. And we hope to find the answer in the coming weeks.
So I've seen a recent analysis of various UFO sightings from around the world. Based on the number of reports in the 20th century up until now, I'll call it a heat map for lack of better description. But it seems UAP sightings, or these reports at least, come from all over the world, but the greatest concentration of those reports seem to come from English-speaking nations. Any hypothesis on why this might be?
Well, unidentified anomalous phenomena are probably a mixed bag. Most of the events are likely to be related to balloons or drones. And these might be identified in highly populated regions where people look at the sky a lot. And so the first correlation that one finds is with population density and with people monitoring the sky. And that is true of military personnel as well. The regions that are patrolled the most are the ones that have the highest number of reports. And we should factor this out. But as of now, we don't know if there is any clustering of unidentified phenomena because they were all anecdotal. People by chance happened to be at the right place at the right time to notice an object that cannot be identified. A much better approach is a systematic search across the entire sky over time. And that's what we are doing in the Galileo project. We built an observatory that monitors the sky 24/7 in the infrared, in the optical band, in radio, and in audio. And from that, we can infer the background, how many objects that have explanations like birds, drones, balloons, airplanes, how many of those constitute the background, and whether there is anything that appears to be unusual. And if there is, we can figure out the statistics, how rare it is relative to the background. This is the scientific way of studying unidentified phenomena. And as of now, it was never followed. And so the Galileo project is charting new grounds. And we have one working observatory, but we plan to make more copies of it. And of course, we will analyze the data using machine learning, artificial intelligence software, to make it automated, to identify objects based on computer algorithms.
Now, in recent years, reports from so-called whistleblowers or former government officials or even military have begun to surface. There have been congressional hearings over these claims recently. For example, a former U.S. Air Force intelligence officer called David Grush, he recently testified to having seen evidence of UAPs and asserted that the U.S. government was covering it up. He went as far as saying the Pentagon has recovered, quote, non-human biologics. Then in Israel, Chaim Eshed, the former head of the Israeli Defense Ministry, the space directorate there, he said publicly in 2020, he said this, quote, there is an agreement between the U.S. government and aliens. They signed a contract with us to do experiments here. Eshed is effectively saying extraterrestrial life exists and they have made contact with humans. Now, as of yet, no government has ever produced any concrete evidence to back these claims. You study the cosmos. How do you interpret all these revelations?
As a scientist, I am guided by evidence. And as of now, we haven't seen convincing evidence, indeed, coming from governments. We see fuzzy images that are not convincing. It's quite possible that there is classified data that is far more convincing. Because the government monitors the sky for national security purposes, and they would be the first to notice things that are unusual. Astronomers, scientists are focused on small regions of the sky at any given time, and they look very far away at distant sources. So they ignore anything near Earth. And so it's quite possible the US government would be the first to notice some unusual phenomena and also retrieve materials from them. But we haven't seen that evidence. And the question is, does it exist? And David Grush says it does. And he spoke with 40 people that were involved in programs for retrieval and reverse engineering of these materials, according to him, of alien spacecraft. And he was asked to provide contact details for those people that he knows were involved. And he promised to give them to representatives in the U.S. Congress. And that offers a path forward in the sense that they can go to these contacts and figure out what lies behind his claims. And if we don't hear anything within a year, we would know that they were fabricated stories. If we do, if there is anything behind them, if there is any fire behind the smoke, we will find out soon enough within the coming year. And of course, as a scientist, I don't rely on the government for information about interstellar space. I would like to collect my own evidence. The sky is not classified. The oceans are not classified. That's why I lead the Galileo project, where we are hoping to find scientific data that will tell us whether unidentified anomalous phenomena exists. And the expedition that we had to the Pacific Ocean is an example of an attempt to collect materials from an unusual object that collided with Earth.
Yes, that is true. Good point. Nobody owns space. All right, coming up next, governments around the world say they exist, but they won't quite say they don't either. So they have task forces set up to monitor. We'll discuss it when we return with Dr. Avi Loeb. Keep it right here. The MO will be right back.
Only one main thing is important for Nazism, internationally speaking, and that is that nations that are allowed to do anything are the master races. And then you have the minor nations who are the slaves.
Americans, Barack Obama and others, have had a concept of American exceptionalism.
International law exists as long as it serves American interests. If it doesn't, it doesn't exist.
By turning those Russians into this dangerous boogeyman that wants to take over the world. That was a conscious strategy.
Zusammenbruch der Sowjetunion eigentlich wie eine Art Filetstück auf dem silbernen Tablett lag.
NATO said, ha, it's ours, we move east.
The reason US hegemony is so dangerous is it denies the sovereignty of other countries.
The exceptionalism that America uses in its international war planning is one of the greatest threats to the populations of different nations.
If NATO were disbanded, shareholders in the United States and elsewhere in large arms companies would lose millions and millions.
War is business and business is good. And that is the reality of what we're facing, which is fascism.
Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez. And I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously, why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
Welcome back to The MO. I'm Manila Chan. It's a he said, she said, or in this case, civilians say one thing and the government says another. So without a firm admission that aliens have come to Earth, places like the U.S. and China have created task forces to surveil the skies and investigate alleged sightings. Meanwhile, cynics say all of this is merely a distraction for government failures all around the globe. Dr. Avi Loeb, astrophysicist and author of the new book, Interstellar, is back with us. Thank you for sticking around, Dr. Loeb. So while governments around the world don't outright acknowledge even the potential existence of extraterrestrial life, they will go as far as creating these task forces to address aerial phenomenon. Now, in the U.S., we have the UAP Task Force. In China, they have what's called Unidentified Air Conditions Team, made up of both military and civilian sources. France, Russia, the aforementioned Israelis, and many other nations. The fact that these task forces even exist, is that a soft or tacit admission in some way that aliens might be out there? And do they pose a risk to national security?
Governments are interested in national security, and that's why they have these task forces to figure out whether these unusual objects that they might be seeing or hearing reports about represent technologies that adversaries possess. That is their main motivation. Governments are not scientific organizations. They cannot help us interpret the devices that come from interstellar space. And by the way, these devices, if they come from far away, from thousands of light years away, they don't care how we split the land on this rock that we happen to be born on, the Earth. It's completely irrelevant from a distance. And so it's not a matter of national security whatsoever. Any visiting probes from distant civilizations should be scientific knowledge that is shared by all humans on Earth. And therefore, if governments do possess some information or materials that represent something that came from outside the solar system, they should provide those details to scientists who can make sense of these materials. And then obviously it would be of great importance for the future of humanity, because we will know that we have neighbors in our cosmic environment. It may change our behavior. If you think about living in a family that feels isolated and going out to the backyard and then suddenly noticing a tennis ball that was thrown by a neighbor, it doesn't make sense to hide that information from your family members. You want them to know that they have a neighbor, because they might choose to close the curtains on their windows for privacy reasons, or they might choose to go out of the home and visit those neighbors and perhaps learn insights from them. But at any event, there might be a time when these neighbors will knock on your front door or affect your home. And so you really want to know in which neighborhood you live and who you have as your neighbors. That is scientific knowledge. That is similar to knowing that the Earth moves around the sun. If you ever want to go to Mars, you better recognize that, because otherwise your spacecraft will never reach the destination, Mars. If you think that Mars orbits the Earth, if you have some unrealistic view that the Earth is at the center of the universe, and thinking that we are the smartest that ever existed since the Big Bang is similar in a way to thinking that we are at the center of the universe.
Now, going back to your Manus Island expedition, I know the sphericals you and your team recovered, they're currently out at labs right now. But if the lab findings indeed turn up that these spheres came from outside our solar system, or perhaps even artificial or manufactured, meaning they were made somehow, not that you or your team created them, could this be something that would trigger governments around the world to begin crafting policy on how to address alien life forms, like a Geneva Convention for ET?
If we do have convincing evidence based on materials that indeed we are not alone and that there is a smarter kid on our cosmic block, it will be time for us to think more broadly about how we behave. And we might develop aspirations for space, because if someone arrived at our front door, we better think about arriving at their front door and learning more about their whereabouts. And it really depends on what we find. If we find a functioning gadget, we can learn how it works. It will be like having a glimpse at our technological future in case the senders are far more advanced than we are. It could involve artificial intelligence at a level that far exceeds what we have at this moment. But even space trash would educate us about the abundance of such objects and how many civilizations may have existed around us. And altogether, it will change the way we behave, and I hope for the better, because it makes little sense for us to fight with each other, to initiate wars, to waste resources on military budgets, when there is a much more advanced neighbor far away that could teach us something about space. And I think altogether it will change not only our perception about our place in the universe, our religious beliefs possibly, but also world politics. And I hope that it would bring it to a better place where, given the global perspective, given the fact that we realize that in space there are more things, more real estate, more exciting developments than here on Earth, that we will all work together because we are all equal members of the human species. We are all in the same boat. The boat is the Earth moving through space as the ocean of space. And I got to realize that when I was on the ship, on the boat, in the Pacific Ocean, where all the members of the team work together for a successful mission. And so if we realize that the Earth is a boat and we are all in the same boat, and there is someone else out there, and we might want to go and visit that someone, and it will give us a sense of being in the same boat and working together.
Lastly, a philosophical question for you. There are a number of scientists in your field who have refuted your findings thus far, even rebuking you personally. But there are laypersons all around the world, too, who also absolutely rule out even the idea that there is life beyond Earth, much less intelligent life. And there are others who absolutely believe they exist. And then there are people like me who are simply open to the idea, but aren't convinced one way or the other at this point. So regardless of what camp they fall in, humans all around the world are fascinated with the idea that aliens exist. We make movies about them, we write books about them, and so forth. Why are we obsessed with this idea?
Humans are fascinated by the possibility that we might have a partner out there, because it will change our life and give us a different perspective about our existence. It's just like finding a partner in your private life. It changes your life. And insisting or arguing that we have no partner just by standing at home and saying, there is nobody else out there, where is everybody? The way Enrico Fermi, the physicist, asked. Well, the truth is that to find others, you need to go to dating sites. At the very least, you need to look through your windows, and you better use a telescope, or you go out to your backyard and search for any objects that came from the street that may indicate that there are others out there. Just sitting at home and claiming where is everybody is not the right approach. And that's what we have been doing over the past 70 years. since Enrico Fermi asked the question, where is everybody? We were waiting for a phone call, looking for radio signals that they might have transmitted in our direction. But for that, you need them to be active while you're waiting. However, if they send packages that are in our mailbox, in our backyard, we can find them irrespective of whether our senders are still alive. And that's a completely different method that I'm practicing right now, as of now. And of course, you know, to get the spherules from the expedition took a few days for FedEx to deliver them to my home doorstep. But I realized that it took them perhaps millions or billions of years to arrive to Earth. And it just gives you a different sense on your place if you figure this out. Now, my point is that it's not a matter of opinion, because we are talking about material evidence, the way physics works. So people can have opinions, but eventually we should be guided by the evidence, and it's possible for us to collect it. People often say extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and they don't seek the evidence. That's why it's a circular argument. But the key is that extraordinary evidence requires extraordinary funding. And when such funding would be allocated to the search, you know, there is a chance we would find low-hanging fruit. And that's exactly what I'm engaged in right now, because people didn't do the search for objects in our backyard until the Galileo project was announced. And I'm glad to say that we already collected some materials and we are now studying them. So hopefully within the coming months, we will know more. And it may well be that it's easier to find what lies in interstellar space at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean than it is to get it from politicians in Washington, D.C.
Dr. Avi Loeb, professor at Harvard University, director of the Institute for Theory and Computation, head of the Galileo Project. Check out his newest book called Interstellar. It's out now. Thank you so much, Avi. All right, usually this program aims to answer questions or fill in the gaps on the topics that we cover. But when it comes to this, I don't know. I may actually have more questions now than I did before we began. So we'll keep watching as this decades-old debate continues. That is going to do it for this episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy and current affairs. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you again next time to figure out the MO.